Okay, I think we'll get started here. I realize we're a little bit behind schedule, but first off, this is our family. It's my wife, Jennifer, and our oldest daughter, Emily. Emily, do you want to tell them how old you are?
3.
Are you happy to be here?
Mm-hmm.
What are we talking about today? Do you know what Mommy and Daddy have been studying? We've been studying hospitality, and Emily has enjoyed studying it with us. She calls it doing hospitality. She was coloring a picture of what she does with her friends, and so trying to participate.
Yeah.
And then our youngest daughter, Bethel, is 6 weeks on Saturday.
Yeah, and first my daddy found when my daddy was here first, he found my name tag. But then he was gone, and then he came back, and then he found it.
He's a hero.
Okay. And then this is my wife's sister, Alyssa. She's here to care for our children while we talk. And so, yeah, glad to be here. So our subject is the forgotten art of hospitality, relational strength through purposeful hosting and interaction. So we're going to go over 7 different facets that focus on hospitality as it relates to our church, our local church body. There's lots of other areas of hospitality that we are inspired about as well, but trying to keep it narrow. So our message is loving others, especially weak relationships, to enable deeper, closer, and thriving unity among the body of Christ. If we view ourselves as members of the same body, we share life. We are connected, and I think of the Bible verse, it's talking about husbands, but it says, "No man ever yet hated his own body, but nourishes and cherishes it, even as Christ the church." I think as we view ourselves as one body, it gives us that when we're sharing with others, we're sharing with ourselves. So it all boils down to inclusivity. Hospitality is a key component in integrating new members into the local body and maintaining those relationships. So our first facet is motivated hospitality, partnering with our bountiful God. And this focuses on the where we get what we give. We're getting what we first receive from God, and then we give out of that.
Mm-hmm. So it's good to connect our motivation for hospitality with the motivation that we have for the rest of life, which is really following Jesus' example, following him. He was motivated by the good of everyone and their whole good, each person's spirit, soul, and body. He had a desire for the good of all of that. So hospitality is following his example and sharing out of what we receive from him, which is abundance. There's a verse in Ephesians. It talks about abounding toward us in all wisdom and prudence. And I think that kind of sums up the spiritual bounty that he's given us of love and forgiveness and grace and wisdom and belonging. And all of those things, when we receive them, we can also treat others with that abundance that flows out of Jesus' abundance. I like to think about it that even though Jesus didn't have a house where he invited people over and cooked meals for them, we are able to follow his example in hospitality, even though he didn't do it in the ways that we think of. The principles are the same. The physical bounty that God lavishes on us is also an inspiration for our hospitality. He provides an environment for us to be hosted in on this earth. He gives us all that we need for our physical life as well as our spiritual life. And he's preparing an amazing shower of hospitality for us in heaven too. Feasts and clothes and a mansion for us. When he was on the earth, he cared for people's physical needs as the expression of God's love toward us in washing feet and healing the sick. And I also noticed the abundance that he fed the 5,000 with and the 4,000. There were baskets left over. There was a lot left. He didn't do it half-heartedly. These are the attitudes that we want to reflect. Jesus' spiritual bounty and physical bounty work together to create relational bounty, and that's what we're after in hospitality, is developing relationships that are close and meaningful and draw us not only closer to each other but to God. So, examples of that are in Jesus' attitude toward people. He didn't just talk to the crowds, the multitudes. He also made time for one-on-one relationships and that small group interaction of the disciples. So his conversations, his interactions really came down to what was vital. He gave examples from physical life and tied it back into spiritual reality. So he's our inspiration we're looking to in hospitality.
Our next facet is authentic hospitality. And this has to do with what our life looks like just on a normal basis. Are we being real with how we're reaching out? And I forgot to mention it at the beginning, but we're hoping to have a little bit of time for question and answer at the end. And we also have a handout for the slides. But if you can jot down little ideas that come along that you can apply to your own life as you reach out in hospitality, I think your personal inspiration within the moment is going to be even more applicable to your life than what we're sharing. And yeah, I would also encourage you to review the notes. We're going to go fairly quickly and you'll probably miss something if you go back over it and look at what's happening.
Mm-hmm. So authentic hospitality boils down to letting hospitality be part of the fabric of your home. And that's going to be real if you're practicing the principles of hospitality toward your family first. The most authentic service is service that you carry out day after day from your heart on a regular basis. So serving the people in your home is the first step, and it's going to flow out beyond that naturally. So tying it back to the first facet, just like our hospitality flows out of God's abundance toward us, if we are practicing that care and intentionality toward the people in our home, then they will be receiving something that they can then pass on to others also. It's kind of a chain reaction almost, that as they are secure in what you're giving to them, they will be more likely to reach out with that to others, thinking especially of children.
So that turns hospitality into a whole family effort. As we host other guests in our home, we should all be involved. And dad should be ready to help with hospitality as much as moms. Maybe in different ways, but together is the key point. And I think part of this is just recognizing what we already do in our lives that aid in that hospitality effort of hosting others. Mm-hmm. As we're working our job to provide for the expenses, let's find inspiration in that we're not just waiting to get home so that we can do what life is really meant for. Let's enjoy our work and remember that it ties into the big picture of hosting others and having to give to him that needeth, I think of that Bible verse. So also help brainstorm. Think about both with your wife and with your children how to spend quality time with those that are in your home. Mm-hmm. Gather supplies to host them well. Help to set up the special, whether it's special plates on the table or going out and getting some flowers. I mean, stretch yourself and think about what you can do. Barbecuing or other food specialties that you can do that your wife maybe doesn't naturally have a good handle on. Child care. Take care of the children while your wife is preparing food and cleaning and maintenance. I think even a mowed yard can speak of your desire to be hosting well and being a place for others to find enjoyment and refreshment. In your communication with your guests, think about leading out in giving the invitations for people to come over and leading out in the subject matter, what your visit's all about. I also think that communicating after your guests leave is a key part of showing them value and making hospitality part of your whole, making it authentic. Consider what other things a servant leader could do that don't fit into your culturally defined male role. I think of the time that we spent in Ghana, West Africa, and the guys there would butcher the chickens and cook the meat. That was sort of the guy's job. Or they would go to the borehole to get water with their motorcycle. There's lots of things that we can do that don't fit into our normal box, but I think if we're a servant, nothing will be too menial for us.
Mm. So for hospitality to really authentically reflect your family, it needs to involve every member of your family or your household. Maybe some of you are living by yourselves even. It doesn't mean that you can't include others in your hosting. Think about the people who are an integral part of your life right now, and maybe you can involve roommates or friends. And it's a good discipleship opportunity, a good teaching opportunity, especially for children. I think of that as a mom with little children, and I want to start involving them while they're little because it makes a big difference in their worldview. Talking about hospitality ahead of time is a privilege, and involving them in the whole process of figuring out who we're going to have over and how, what we're going to do with them, is a way to stretch them into a growing role as a host or hostess. So there's many things that they can do to aid you, and not just aid you, but show care for your guests. You can give them drinks to hand out, or have them take coats, or go turn lights on to make it welcoming, anything like that. You be aware, and it will help them to become aware. I think of my aunt, who must model hospitality really well to her daughter, because when we go to their house, she takes care of my 3-year-old. She just seems to view it as a great privilege. She's written me a note before and saying, "Thank you for letting me play with Emily." And I think for that to come out of an 8-year-old, someone must have taught her well. I think that's a key. So help children to think of what their friends would like to do, and help them not to just stick to that. It's great to have children involved with people on their peer level, but also crossing age barriers is a really good way for them to grow into adults and show respect for the people that come to your home. And caring for people that are younger than they are also is a good opportunity for them to learn things that will aid them when they're older, whether it's being a parent or a babysitter. In all of this, we are following Jesus once again. It's for ourselves, for our children, for whoever's in our household. It comes back to his example of serving. That's what he came for. He didn't come to serve, to be served, but to serve and give his life. So as we grow into this role, let's remember that Jesus was thriving in this, and our children can, and we can too.
So part of making hospitality authentic is establishing habits in your home that show value for people I think this applies to the way you treat your children. If you're a young person, the way you treat your siblings. It shows being intentional about your time when you do things that show your value for people. So stop your busyness to make time for others. Add margin to your life to make hosting well possible. I know for myself, it's easy for me to run from one thing to the next and sort of be scatterbrained. And it works well if you're trying to just have an enjoyable time yourself. But if you're trying to show value to other people, that often takes time. And so see what you can cut out of your life to make so that you have time to do that well. Put distractions away during visiting time with people. Whether it's people in your home or outside your home that are coming into your home, make sure you have a separation between your work and your time with people, or time that you need to spend on your phone. Make sure that your phone's not stealing your relationships. Consider quitting work early or taking an extended lunch break or even taking a day off to spend on relationships. This doesn't apply to in the home, but one of our ministers took his lunch break and took me out to eat recently and spent probably an hour and a half together. Obviously, he didn't get as much work done that day, but it meant a lot to me and showed me that he valued me and was willing to sacrifice to make that possible. Help facilitate people's transition into your home. I feel like I'm still growing in this, but when people arrive, get up and go meet them at the door. Let them know that you value them being there, and take their coats or find them seats and give them a drink. Or the big thing is try to accommodate every person. It's easy, especially if you're having a large family over and there's only a few of you to go around, for the children to feel like they're just there because their parents are there. Mm-hmm. But be intentional. Make time for each person. Send the people off in a valuable way. Walk with them to their car, or if they live close by and they're walking, walk with them. I think of, again, our time in Ghana, and we had a local couple over. They'd recently got married, and I don't know if it was a couple weeks later, maybe they had us over for a meal. And after our visit there, they walked us the whole way back to our house. And it spoke that they valued us, mm-hmm. and that they were showing us that they cared. And was a reminder that we need to stretch ourselves in that. Goodbye hugs or giving them blessings or even gifts as they leave is a way to spell love to them. A family moved into our church a year and a half ago or so from Arizona, where they were sort of by themselves, and all of their children seem like they are really hungry for fellowship. And just giving them a hug as they leave is a valuable way of telling them that you care about them as an individual, mm-hmm. and that it's not just their families there. Pray together with people as they leave. Send them off with prayer. And then communicate with people after they've been with you, in between your visits. Hark back to what you valued talking about, and stay updated. I think it's really easy to have a good conversation and then you never hear anything about it in the future. And it's like, wow, did they actually care, or were they just putting on a show? And I think part of being authentic is caring enough to remember what you talked about. Keep conversations going about your life and about theirs. Talk about your inspirations or your victories, or your struggles or failures, as well as just practical developments in your life. Whether you got a job or whether your roof started leaking. All of those things are sharing your life with them.
So strike a balance between the special and the simple, just like you probably do already in your own families or houses. I think it's great to remember that I'm thinking of an example from a book that I read as a child about Laura Ingalls. You've probably heard of The Little House on the Prairie and all of those. at one point, one of the family says, what's good enough for us is good enough for anybody. And as long as that's said with the right attitude, it is true. It's actually a good way to think about hospitality. Now, hopefully, what's good enough in your house is good enough for anybody. If it's not, maybe we need to think about what is authentic in our household? What is the norm? So I think an ideal norm is that sometimes you're doing something special, but a lot of the time it's also simple. And finding that balance with guests is a great thing to work on. Remember, it doesn't have to be perfect, whatever it is, whether it's your household decor or your meeting them at the door. As long as you're doing it with love, doing it with intention, you will grow in it. And it doesn't have to be all put together to bless your guests. So when I think of hosting simply, which is great as a normal thing, I think of a family in our church who does this very well. They have wide open doors that just, they want to have everybody over anytime, and they make you feel really welcome. And part of what makes that possible for them is that they don't try to do hospitality in an elaborate way at all. You might go over to their house and drink water out of a coffee cup that doesn't have a handle. And that's just okay. What you feel when you go to their house is love. They want you there. So that's one part of the picture. Simple hosting makes those spur-of-the-moment interactions possible. And maybe you've thought of hosting as something that you have to do in a particular preset way. Maybe it's time to rethink. If it feels like too much work for you to have people over, maybe it's because your ideals are just a little bit too high in some ways. So feel free to use paper plates if that helps you feel ready to have company. Have food on hand that you can just heat and serve, even if you didn't make it yourself. Maybe something you bought and put in your freezer. Or, since hospitality isn't all about eating together, maybe you can try what one of the couples in our church did. They had just gotten married, and the lady didn't feel comfortable with her cooking skills yet. And they would have people over for tea and dessert, or maybe just tea even. And they had a great rapport with the young people in our church and were able to really speak into their lives. Whatever it is, it's the heart behind it that will come through with love, even in a simple way of hosting. Show value, too, by sometimes doing something special. I think we do this with our families from time to time, and if not, we probably should show them that we value them, too. Make a meal that doesn't happen every day, or decorate the table. Even if it's just a fresh flower at everyone's place, it doesn't have to be perfect, like I said before, by standards of etiquette or anything else that you might think of as a way of gauging your hospitality. Throw a party with the whole house decorated, or plan an activity like sledding. One of my best memories from my teenage years is going to a family's house to planned a great sledding party with lanterns set up along the dark hill that we were sledding down. We had a wonderful evening and went in and had probably hot chocolate or something afterwards, a nice cozy time in their house. They were a family who did not come from an Anabaptist background, and as Matthew and I were talking about hospitality, we thought a lot of times people that didn't grow up in what some of us call our circles do a much better job of this. And it's not across the board, but perhaps what makes it that way is that instead of thinking about how we've always done it, they're thinking about how can we open our lives to other people. So do that. My sister recently, for another example, she and a friend were talking about a holiday that they found out about, which is Middle Child's Day. And they got together a group of people. My dad was part of it. He's also a middle child in his family. They got together a group of the people from our church who were middle children, and they had a really interesting evening getting a group of people together that were not normally together, interacting. They played monkey in the middle and had a mystery supper and did all kinds of things. But, yeah, got to move on.
So being real and vulnerable in your relationships, being real and vulnerable is the quickest way to deep relationships. Part of being authentic is letting reality be seen. Share yourself with your family. Share yourself and your family by letting life sit out. This is a concept that we thought about as we were thinking about what makes hospitality real. And if you're going to put your life away, if you're going to clean up your house and make it a sterile environment, you might as well be relating in a restaurant. The reason that we have people in our homes is so they get to know us and know who we're actually like. It's okay to clean up, but it's also okay to leave your house a wreck and let people see what it is. But we're talking more about providing conversation starters by letting them see what is normal, whether that's things on your refrigerator, pictures of extended family, or school projects that your children have recently completed. If it means something to you and you've posted it, let it up when company's there so they can ask about it. Maybe the books that you're reading, leave them out on the end table so that people can ask about what you're learning. Or a whiteboard we have at our place that my wife puts a to-do list on and inspirational verses. Might be easy to erase that before company comes, but let it sit out so that they can interact with your life. The big point is to be authentic. Guard against the pride of trying to make life better than it really is. I think of having a book that I would like to read sitting on the end table. It's sort of counterproductive because if they ask me about it, I'll have to admit that, no, I actually ain't reading that. Making an artificial good impression is actually counterproductive to the whole point. Mm-hmm. So endeavor to let reality shine through all of your preparations.
Mm-hmm. The next facet we'd like to cover is empowered hospitality. This is really how we can do hospitality well, how we can be the people that we need to be to allow hospitality to flourish.
So remember that it is God who is going to bless your guests. Think on His desire to bless them. God is the one that wants to help you to host. He's the host and you're just the agent. It's not all on you. Don't stress out. Relax and let His life in you be what is sharing, because that's what reality is. Mm-hmm. Think about and remember His love for your guests. View people with the potential and the possibility that God sees. It's easy to put people into a box and feel like you can't relate to them because you have different paths or you're at a different place in the present, but view them with the possibility that God sees in their life. Mm-hmm. And interact with them and help them to reach their potential. And thank God for what He's doing in their lives. Remember that the big picture is God's glory. That's God's purpose for all creation. That's His purpose for you and for your guest. So relax into partnership with God. Mm-hmm. And I think this also ties into a humility that remembers that whatever we have that we're giving is not ours. It was given us. So as every man has received the gift, even so minister the same one to another, mm-hmm. as good stewards of the manifold grace of God.
The next thing we'd like to talk about is tailoring your hospitality and being all things to all men, women, and children. Being aware of their needs so that we can minister hospitality in a way that reaches their heart.
So tailor your visits for your guests' enjoyment. I think we all probably know that we should do this, but I think applying mental energy to actually making it happen is very worthwhile. So think about what your guests like. Do they like to be outdoors? Do they like a cozy environment? Or maybe they like sweets. Make sure you have a dessert. Or maybe they like a safe environment where they're not there's not danger. Or maybe they're adventurous, like one of the guys in our church that he likes whitewater rafting. So maybe think about doing something that would be right down their line. Consider their preferences and the stage of life that they're at. How are they most apt to open their hearts and their mouths and communicate their heart with you? Be adaptable. Observe people and take notice of what the choices are that they're making between your visits. But remember that you don't always know the reason people are making the choices they're making. I think it's good to invest time in making something special, especially if you've noticed that they've been choosing that at other times. But don't lose heart if you do something special and they don't even think about it. They don't even notice, because maybe they're just doing that out of peer pressure or something. Ask your guests what they do as a family and let them teach you something that will be fun for a broad age range. I know for us as a small family, interacting with a large family can be sort of intimidating and feels like we don't get around to everybody, but maybe they have an idea. Family in our church came over to our place and taught us the family game, which was able to involve everybody in the house. So propose things that you enjoy. They might just thrive in participating in the things that you enjoy, even if it stretches them. And be open to surprises. A lady that lived around the corner from us for a while came over to our place. She didn't have any similar background to us, and yet, yeah, she enjoyed Red Rubus tea at our place and talks about it as something she enjoyed when she was there.
Another aspect of tailoring your hospitality is to consider people's dietary needs. That's something that seems to be becoming more and more necessary. We were in Ghana for about 2 years together and came back, and it seemed like all of a sudden the people in our church were falling like flies. Like, just everybody had some new way of eating. And we kind of thought, what's going on? What's wrong with these people? And then, wouldn't you know, now I'm one of them. So I can come at it from, I can see either side of the picture and realize with others who aren't needing to eat in a special way that it can be kind of difficult to consider those dietary needs. And also from the perspective of someone that does need to eat carefully most of the time, I see that it's very, very meaningful when people do consider that. So I think from what I've observed, it makes a big difference to in people feeling cared for if you know that they have some different need than what you're used to cooking for. Ask them about it if you don't understand what it is, and they'll probably be happy to explain it to you. Remember that the food that you make for them doesn't have to be exactly like the rest of the meal. It probably can't be, and they're probably used to that, and they'll find that you cooking for them is special just because it was particularly for them. It's part of treating others as unique. We all have different needs. If you're not sure about what you want to make, run it by them. And if you find something that works, that you're good at cooking, that isn't what your family normally eats, remember it and file it away for other opportunities when you get to have people over that have the same type of eating needs. And remember that other cultures' food can be an exciting way of getting kind of a variety into other people's palates. Maybe Indian curry would work for their diet where American food doesn't. Whatever it is, try not to have gatherings that are focused on food if there's with people that can't participate. It's fine to have people over and have pizza, even if there's someone that can't eat it, as long as you do cook something specially for them. But if you're calling it a pizza party, there's just kind of a different feel that it has, and it's more considerate not to try to rally around food when somebody's left out. Think about convenience for your guests. This happens before you have them over and during your visit with them. We were made more aware of this when my grandfather came over and suggested that we keep a chair in our entryway so that people like him have a place to sit to tie their shoes. We don't think about that. But maybe we should. There's being aware of what people need is a big key in making them comfortable. Remember that if the children are happy, it's a big part of everybody else being happy. So even if you don't need bibs and toys and things like that in your home on a regular basis, keeping them on hand can really facilitate better quality time for your hospitality.
So another thing to remember is that hospitality flourishes in different environments, and I think all of us are naturally going to have something, some type of environment that our home is based on our personalities or our experiences, but remember to start with where you're at and develop the ability to adapt that environment mm-hmm. for different people. So have a wide open doors environment where you have an open invitation for people to gather, even unplanned. Family in our church often will say at the, after church, they'll say, "We don't have a plan, but come right over." And they say it loud enough and often enough that they really mean it. They want anybody from the church. And if the whole church showed up, they'd be happy. They have a fun-loving desire for fellowship. And they include anyone who's willing. I think this type of setting is a good way to combat a feeling of cliques in your church. Because if you're not part of the clique and there's an invitation like this around, well then, just participate and you can be part. And we can all be one body. Mm. Purposeful, one-on-one or small group, a special focus environment. This really makes it easier to adapt what you talk about and what you do to be specific for the person that you're interacting with. And I think that facilitates a lot of deep conversation. But the downside is it requires a lot more interaction, a lot more interactions to reach to everybody. So maybe you're going a mile deep but only reaching an inch wide. Full of communication. Talk about everything under the sun and above it. There's a lot of physical and spiritual things that we can talk about that will aid in our relationship. Communication is the best way to enter into your guests' history and their future. Spend the present together, but learn about what God has done in their life and their vision for what they see Him doing. An environment that's full of action. Do all kinds of things together. It gives a great context for sharing, for shared experiences to use as a platform in your relationship. Or a peaceful companionship environment. I know this one's a stretching one for me because I like to do things. So, but just sitting quietly together, worshiping in prayer and song can be a great way to grow in your relationships. Mm. Observing people together or observing life together helps your perspectives to merge. Communication is sharing the parts of your life that you can't otherwise experience together in the present. Mm-hmm. So, what is your reputation? And what can you do? What's a small step you can take to develop your hospitality into a better place for more relationships?
Mm. Another way to tailor your hospitality is to deliver it. And this is especially useful if for some reason your house doesn't work to be the environment for people to interact in right now. Recently we had a remodeling project going on, and while it could have worked to invite someone over. We wound up cooking a meal and taking it to a large family and interacting in their home. And that was a really enjoyable style of hospitality that, while it wasn't in our house, it kind of embodied the principles of hospitality. This also is good for if you have older people in your church who maybe can't go up your steps, or it's too far for them to travel, or they don't feel comfortable getting out of their house. Take your visiting to their house if they're up to that, and they'll feel the love and care that they would feel in your home as you go to theirs. Also, other ways of giving people that same feeling of hospitality that aren't in your home include visiting somebody's workplace and bringing them a treat, or arranging to help them some Saturday or whenever you can with a project they've got going. You can even buy a gift card to a restaurant and send a couple out and take care of their children. There's so many different ways to practice these things that are really the heart of hospitality.
Okay, so the next facet is family hospitality, and this is shared life. I think of Dean Taylor's message this morning and talking about us being buddies, that we're connected as a family. I think this really ties into that.
Mm-hmm. So we'd like to stretch your concept, perhaps, of who your family is. This was exciting to us as we talked about it, realizing that the church is our family. And this is broader than our local congregations, but that's what we're focusing on today. So, is there anyone in your church who's missing out on the relationships of family because they don't have family nearby? If that's the case, then what does that say about how deep the fellowship is at your church? Does your church do well at eclipsing family loyalty? If we're really brothers and sisters, then let's show it and make that felt. It's easy in churches where there is a lot of blood relationship, like the church that we come from, to not really know exactly why you're close to the people you're close to. Is it because they are part of your family or because of the connection you have in Christ? It's hard to know until people who weren't part of that family come in, and they can tell what's really holding your church together. So maybe think about how they feel. Think about life from their perspective. And start treating your local church people as if they were blood relatives. This is something that can look a little bit overwhelming. And remember that you can take small steps toward that and keep growing with that picture in your mind. So some ways to practically do this are thinking of them when you're planning special times and updating them on the things that are going on in your life like you would your family. Value spending time together just to be together. This is one that connects with me because I think of our family reunion that we're actually about to go to next week. There's not a whole lot planned for that reunion. People are coming together excited just to be together. And that's how it is with family, if you have good family relationships. And that's how it ought to be in our church, too, that beyond even having conversation, which is very valuable, we want to be together because we belong to each other. So show solidarity beyond your common interests and view your church relationships as what they hopefully will be, lifelong interactions. But even if your church relationships fluctuate and people leave your church, you won't waste time or effort putting your heart into relationships as if they're going to last forever, because as long as they're following Christ and you're following Christ, you're still part of the same family. Yeah, so share your life, your household, and who you are, what you do, and what you have. Hospitality is love, and love is selfish and sacrificial and lavish, like this says.
Selfless.
Did I say selfish? Hopefully not selfish.
Okay, so what do you do with your family or extended family? Start to do those things with your church family. Something as simple as walking to a stream together or visiting their college or work. Have a camp out with them. Consider what your family traditions are and start including your guests in them. So my grandparents have a collection of teacups, and after the meal they have everybody pick a teacup so that you can sort of express your mood or personality just with the cup that you choose. And I think that's a great way to include people when they come into your home in the traditions that you have. Family prayer and devotions, or singing before or after meals. Family in our church has a song that they sing after, right before every lunch, and when we're there for the meal, we sing it with them. Celebrate holidays. Work on deepening church relationships like you work on deepening your relationship with your in-laws. I think as we view our relationships as long-term, it will give us patience in the process of going deeper and getting connected. This obviously takes time and work, and gradually getting deeper and deeper is okay. The big thing is to be investing and being purposeful in that.
Consider your guests' needs, whether they're single people or families, and think about who's missing fellowship, whether they realize it or not, whether they're vocally, obviously hungry for fellowship, or they have a void in their life and they don't know what it is. Be aware and see if you can sense that for them and start filling the needs that you see. This verse that is partly quoted here is something that I didn't realize related to hospitality in the church until someone called our attention to the principle recently. I think of it as being a verse about inviting people that you wouldn't normally invite to your feasts, probably outside your church, you know, the down and outers of society, as some people call them. But actually, this has a principle for our church, too, which is those who are left out, those who are overlooked, and it's important to include them in the feasts that we have, whether figurative or literal. Prepare for opportunities. You're more likely to want them if you are ready for them. And don't make your bar of being ready too high, but start putting your heart into making your house a welcoming environment for people, and start preparing some food, and then see who you can find to have over, whether it's one person, one friend, or a whole family. Your physical preparation opens your heart to having people in your home.
Another way of treating people as family. Oh, I'm sorry, I missed a point. Ask God to open your eyes to see opportunity. Mm-hmm. He can arrange the gathering he wants.
That's right.
Another way to treat people as family is to plan future activities together. Climb a mountain together, go camping, do a work project together, or hire them to do something for you. Different people in our church have hired me. I do handyman stuff to work for them, and just that little bit of work interaction has given a lot of context to our relationship. Go on a joint vacation together, or have a timed discussion time. I'll throw the name out there because I don't think he'll mind, but Henry Milligan was at my place, and we spend a good bit of time together. Him and I are very similar personalities, and so we can talk a lot and not really come up with a conclusion. So one time when his girlfriend was up, I told him that next time he comes down through, I want us all to have three subjects to talk about, and we'll do it in a structured way. So we called it Matthew Henry's Commentary, and so my brother was there, and Jenny was there, and his girlfriend. So there was five of us. We had 15 subjects, and each of us took a turn introducing one of our subjects. So we had 5 minutes to introduce our subject, 2 minutes for each person to give their input, and then a minute for responses to that. And then the person that started the subject had 2 minutes to wrap it up and bring a conclusion to it. Mm-hmm. And it was a fun way to spend a whole morning together and actually have something meaningful to walk away with, some conclusions that were really good. Dreaming together develops shared life and vision. So think about the future together and, yeah, try to plan it together. This may highlight your differences and disagreements, but focus on the belonging together, and that will minimize those wedges.
Share things you have that your guests would enjoy, even to the point of being sacrificial. There's a family in our church that moved in a year and a half or 2 years ago, and they came in a bus from Arizona, and they didn't have a whole lot with them when they came, and yet they are really good examples of sharing and giving out of what they have. Recently, they found a jacket, probably at a thrift store, that looked like it might be useful for one of our girls, and they asked us if it's something we could use, and they just keep their eyes open for things that would bless people. Garden produce or maple syrup you made or flowers you grew, sending them off with something that is meaningful to you for whatever reason and that you feel that will be meaningful to them is a good way to almost continue your visit even when you're not together. It's like sharing a part of yourself, a very meaningful part of your send-off. This could also be things that I, as a woman, don't tend to think of, like trade secrets. Matthew was talking about how this isn't just tangible things that we give people, but tips that we share and things that might feel personal or like they're something that is valuable to us. We don't have to feel, intimidated, but...
like selfish with them.
Right, because we're really sharing with ourselves as we share with the body of Christ. We are all one family, one team, and it's for the good of everyone together that we share ourselves. So, yeah, let's distribute to the needs of the saints.
Plan some extended time together. I know a lot of times we think of hospitality as something that happens early Sunday afternoon or during the evening, during the week, but plan to spend an extended period together, maybe a full Saturday or maybe even several days. Sometimes leave it free and impulsive so that those that have adventurous personalities can feel like it's fun and interesting. But other times, set times for each activity and when that will take place in the visit. I think of a time when the Lloyds were up at our place and we sort of hammered out when our meal times were going to be and when we were going to play Foursquare. So whether it's meals or games or rest, sharing, praying, singing together, dessert, or late night talking, in our house we had a saying that all good conversations start after 11 o'clock. Seems like your guard's down and you're comfortable with just sitting there and being together without really saying anything. Seems like somehow that opens us up and lets us share vulnerably and actually go deep. So I think we should try to do that, try to foster that quality time at other times of the day, because not everybody can stay up till midnight. Or maybe consider having them stay for the night. Sometimes the bedtime and get-up routines can really share the flavor of your family and give people insight into family dynamics. If possible, share the plan with each person that's coming ahead of time so they can start anticipating the best part of the visit to them.
Now we want to talk about hospitality. This really develops the idea that our homes are to be places of refreshment for people when they need it and encouragement for the weak and the weary. Sometimes we are those people too. Let's remember that what we're sharing with others, we also need ourselves at times. So we're ministering from a place of humility. We're not the only ones who are doctors, and they're not the only ones who are patients.
So every doctor needs admitted to a hospital every once in a while. Remember that it's not that you're superior, but each one of us needs help when we're in crisis.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to try to just flip pretty quickly through this one and review it in your notes because we are really stretching our time. So be a place of care and awareness of the ways needed. Be a place of care with an awareness of the ways needed to bless the sick in body, soul, and spirit. So these are all things that a hospital is for people and that we can be in our hospitality. A place for acceptance. Don't be exclusive. A place for protection. Don't attack. A place for being served. Don't neglect. A time for weakness. Don't wear them out. A time for comfort. Don't irritate. A time for rest. Don't work them up. A time for reflection. Don't confuse them. A time for analysis. Don't treat rashly. A time for honesty. Don't mask truth. A time for healing. Don't hurt. A time for change of pace. Don't overload them. A time for renewal. Don't discourage. And a time for follow-ups. Don't check out. So don't just stop at the end of your visit. Remember that even if they've got healing from hurts or just refreshment from their being worn out, that checking back in is a good idea.
Mm-hmm. The next part of what we want to talk about is actually the last part, conversational hospitality. And this is, in a way, feels like what we've really been getting to, the meat and potatoes of why you have people in your home. And the other facets of hospitality set the stage for this to go well.
So be practice incarnation, approaching life through their lenses. I think of how Jesus became a human and was relatable to us and was tempted in all manners like as we are. And I think if we mentally do this in other people's lives, it will help us to have deep, meaningful relationship and conversation.
Mm-hmm.
So enter into your guest's mind and try to free them to talk about what they are processing. Often we are almost always processing something. And all we need is the right conversation to sort of open the door to us sharing that freely with other people. So ask yourself some questions about their lives. What does the big picture of life and church look like to them? What is hindering them from unrestricted fellowship within the body of Christ? God wants us to all have free fellowship. But there's always these little things that get in our way. And if you can recognize what that is in other people, it'll help you to draw them out and help them maybe find healing to things that are lacking in their fellowship. What are they already doing to fight for the kingdom of God? Maybe they're resisting worldly drift or combating complacency in the meaningless traditions that they see happening around them. Maybe they're reaching out to the lost or discipling the weak and the young Christians in your church. So if you recognize what they are doing, you can show appreciation for that.
Mm-hmm.
What ministry do they see themselves being involved in the future? If you know a little bit of their vision for the future, it helps to enter into their life and to have deep relationship. What blessings can you speak into their hurts or their visions or other areas of their life? Until we understand where people are coming from, we don't really know what progress looks like for them. And hearing someone say life-giving things about the circumstances or thinking that we have is a huge motivator in keeping on.
Mm-hmm.
Be that life-giver to your guests. And remember, don't overload them with your advice or with the blind spots that you see in their life or even a bigger vision. If they're at the point of breaking with what they already know or have to do, all of us can only handle so much. And sometimes what we need is people to encourage us with maybe the little picture that we have.
Mm-hmm. So now we want to talk about engaging in courageous fellowship. And the way we do this is through being vulnerable with our guests. And this is hard. I'll be the first to say that it's not easy for me. But I think as we model this, as we lead the way in this for the people that we have over, they will feel more able to open up their hearts and talk with us about their weaknesses. As we talk about ours, we share how we're processing them and what we're struggling with, where we're stumped. Sometimes we talk ourselves into clarity by expressing, like being able to put it into words for others, and we want to give them the opportunity to do this also. Subjectively, vulnerability is never safe, but objectively, keeping ourselves to ourselves is actually what's keeping us back, and it's less safe. So trusting God to keep us from the hurts that are too much for us, as we share, and to use any pain that we do experience is what makes it possible. So embrace the advice that may come to you as people hear you sharing vulnerably. You may or may not want it. Maybe that's not why you are sharing, but ask questions so that you know how to apply what they're giving you. And then share with them later how it went putting their advice into practice, especially if it's something that could bless them. If it went well, that can be a good way to show value. And then hopefully, after you share vulnerably with them, they will respond in kind and do the same. Maybe they'll break right into what you were saying, and memories or awareness will be triggered in their minds of what they're actually dealing with, and they'll suddenly want to share it. Well, value that, even if it happens to interrupt you, and wait to keep sharing what you were saying until they're done and they've fully processed what they were wanting to share. Ask them what they've learned through what they're going through, and share how you see God using it in their lives, how you see God using them in spite of their trials or their struggles, and express trust that God will keep doing that in them and through them.
Well, yeah. You done?
Yeah, I'm done.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Open your life to guests by proposing partnering in outreach. I think one of the real vulnerable things is working together. So ask for ways to help them in their calling, or ask them to help you in yours. Working together is an opportunity for vulnerability, mm-hmm. and it highlights your strengths and weaknesses. But this takes the scope of fellowship into the broader areas of outreach and discipleship, and is key to being real and having good conversation. Mm-hmm. Another thing to remember is free conversation requires the freedom of all of its participants. So recognize that even an uninvolved individual's fellowship is limited with those who have unhealed hurts. I think this is key. I think of a man in our church that has some hurts that aren't healed, and we can't have that deep fellowship that I would love to have with him, and to recognize that he needs healing before we can have that freedom is helpful. Also in our own lives, if we have a hurt, to remember that we should work on getting past that hurt, and not just for the person that is involved personally with us, but all of our relationships are being affected by that. Mm-hmm. So no matter who you're relating to, allow your conversations to contribute to purging out those grudges or hurts. And pray for healing for your hurts and for others, mm-hmm. so that relationships can flourish. The primary instrument for their healing is likely not your insights. So embrace what they have to share about your hurts, but be careful with how much you share with them.
So consider people's comfort in communication, how they can be most comfortable opening their lives up to you. We've talked about being vulnerable, and that's important, but it's also, we want to make it as easy as possible for people to be vulnerable, even though it's not easy. One way to do that is giving context to your questions that you're asking, so people don't feel targeted, so people understand where you're coming from. if it's a personal question, see if you can answer the question first. Maybe you want to ask them about how their walk with God is going, but you don't really want to make them feel like you're picking on them. So tell them something that has been inspiring you or you are working on in your relationship with God, or give some context from your own life, and they may realize that you're not looking for them to share something high and lofty about their own lives. Be down to earth with them. Don't stick to a default script. Hobby horses tend to get old and feel flat after a while and not really communicate something deep with your guests. So they often come across as preaching. Use the platform of where people are to build inspiration in them and courage. I love this because it takes what God is already doing in their lives and propels them forward into doing and being more and realizing that God is doing good things in them. It's kind of an impetus. Ask for advice in their areas of strength or experience, and start conversations off with something you already know that is encouraging to them in their lives. Don't stay there, but definitely use that as part of your way of getting close to them, into their lives. There's a family in our church who they are very much involved in and passionate about working in their local food pantry. So if we ask them how that's going, that is a way to just really open up the conversation to something that's on their hearts already and affirm how God's purpose is being worked out in what they're already involved in. As you go, though, if you feel like your guests are being negative, don't try to balance it out with being insensitively optimistic. Hear them and show care, and that will be the best way to help them to get over their negativity.
Another aspect of fostering good conversation is to capitalize on the relaxed environment that happens over food by stretching it out, making it last longer. So whether it's dessert or tea or fruit or something else at the end of your meal, whatever it is, put some time between that and the meal. This will give you some free time, a timeless feel where people maybe feel free to have that after 11 o'clock conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Because they don't know what to do until the anticipated happens. This increases the sense of a special occasion as well, because prolonged mealtime doesn't happen every day. It also makes the free fellowship that happens over food last longer. I know there's a saying that talks about getting people to open their mouth to put food in and their words will come out. Capitalize on that. It also provides a natural break if the conversation gets derailed. If you run out of things to talk about, maybe serving dessert will bring something new to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
Or if your conversation went downhill, it'll give you something to start over with.
Mm-hmm. Expansion, developing new content to share over. This is what keeps us from having stale conversations about the same things and having those hobby horses. Keep learning and share what you're learning with your guests. And conferences like this are a great start. There's many other ways to keep learning and, yeah, learn from many sources.
So that brings us to our conclusion. Sorry about taking all of your break up. But partner with Jesus by inviting his members into your home to experience a merging of journeys through joint experiences and thought processes.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. Take a look at your notes and try to think about what you can do to make hospitality more a part of your home.
There are handouts here, too, if anyone's interested, and feel free to come grab one when you have a chance.